Hello, this is Joe Tomlin for Fringe Review, and I'm speaking today to someone who is working through his lockdown as doing some of the many things he has done in his past, but now he's looking to the future too. So please introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Hello. Hiya, Joe. My name is Matthew Roberts, and I'm a playwright.
And we've spoken to you several times over the years because you have performed at the Edinburgh Fringe and other fringes several times with different shows. And these are always one-person shows that you write and perform yourself. And the last time I spoke to you was 3 months ago,
at
the beginning of lockdown. And could you tell us what you've been doing since and how you see your life going from here to whenever? It's all very open, but I know you've been you've been using your time quite interestingly, so please share.
Well, thank you. You know, it's good to see you, and just the preciousness of what life is now. It's really been a reorientation, and you know, death is a daily recurrence, and that has hit home personally with colleagues. A colleague died last week of cancer. Now, cancer within the context of COVID-19 is an extraordinary thing. And, you know, poems and letters of condolences and having to have a Zoom meeting to mark that last week. And he was a man of 40. So it's very profound when those things are that close to home. And on the other spectrum, you've got like my grandma who's 93, and because the family there are looking after her, she got put in a care home. Now, at that particular time, and then the to and fro-ing of what was happening with slander almost at the care workers in the UK, and going, hang on, back off, don't you dare. And the love and the beauty and the kindness of those care workers, and because she's 93, and you know, and they check up on her every 2 hours, incredible, and just seeing the impact of that. So that's the real sort of, is your blood pumping, flesh and blood, and just in terms of that, it was the end of school term, working as a teacher to pay your bread and butter, and just getting emails from parents saying, thank you, you've really kept us going. And the phone calls that we made to the kids, and to keep that going. And it just shows what a social being and animal that we are, to feed that kind of appetite for life. You know, I think another stone did happen, and I'm glad that the swimming pools are open again, because I've been done that 5 times. But when I spoke to you last, it was week 2 of an MA with the University of Exeter, and that, you know, the module 1, and the title for that was Understanding Education, Global Perspectives. And it's been incredible, absolutely incredible, to have that level of discussion. It's 100% online, and the professors like Jeff and Sharon and the pastoral care from Oliver, that level of dialogue and everything that was happening within the day, what was coming up on the news, was up for grabs for discussion, and they were like gemstones. And also, because of the lens of the only way you could communicate is through the posts that you wrote onto the MA, it led to such a discourse about what was happening and the ripple effects of past, present and future. It's funny enough you said that, because we had to do my final essay, which you find out in a couple of weeks, we had to do a learning environment for 2050. And you had to like design it. You didn't have to get your Play-Doh out or do a clay or pigeon, you know, clay pigeon. But you did have to do a design that like that. But it was the thinking that underpinned it. And then we had to structure it. And I said, can I structure it in a different way? And I did it through the lens of A Christmas Carol. So it was like stave 1, Michael goes ghost. Stave 2, New Labour's educational past. Stave 3. The ghosts of COVID. Stay 4, the latest Ofsted visit. Stay 5. And my concept was looking at it as a compass And that the work in terms of the global charities and organizations and the influx of this kind of understanding has been amazing. So it was a compass that is all encompassing, locally, nationally, internationally, morally, spiritually, physically. And it, the metaphor of a garden by particular academics was just a phenomenal way of thinking about things. And my main focus was about keeping creativity alive. Keeping creativity alive. And it is frightening because there's no coincidence in the level of arts funding that has been cut. What are you going to do to get people to be compliant and controlled? You're going to actually cut the mechanism which they can reflect and affect the world in which we live. So there's been quite a bit of thinking about stuff like that.
So you had already planned to go into this program before COVID was on the horizon, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Do you think this is a journey that others could take, especially now that lockdown, while it's easing, it's clear that the world is not going to be the same for quite a while. Do you think this is a journey that you would recommend other people to look into or maybe continue if they'd started some type of education, a degree somewhere?
Absolutely.
What do you think? And why would you say that?
I think previously there were free courses online, and there is on the BBC Writers Room, the Open University, the University of East Anglia, playwriting and looking at structure and all the television scripts I'm eating up at the moment, to see how they structure those stories. So it's a bit of a college of knowledge at the moment. And I got funding. I got a scholarship of £5,000, which they offer. I mean, I would recommend that course for any educators unreservedly. But I do think this is a time to have a bit of a cocoon, a chrysalis for our creativity, because, you know, we're still here and we're here to tell these stories of what our experiences are. So any kind of thing, and the reading that I've been doing, you know, there was one bit of self-care someone said, like, read the stories you'd loved as kids, read and watch the films that you loved as kids. Joe, I was listening to an audio version of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. I've been watching The Karate Kid and The Goonies. And then, funnily enough, the cast of The Goonies did a Zoom call with Spielberg there and then the director there. And I remember meeting Martha Pimbleton when she was doing Sweat in the West End. So it was just seeing how people are coming together collectively. I know, ironically, in isolation. But this, it's extraordinary, just the education and coming together. I did end up watching a documentary about the making of the Olympics in 2012 with Danny Boyle there. And the opening, what that meant, the opening collectively, that gathering. And then that led me to watching a bit of, like, Take That massive concert in Wembley. And I thought, you know what? I'm missing this time when you would freely, safely come together as a collective, almost like, so this holiday, not holiday, because, I mean, I'll touch on this later, but the idea of how we think, a discipline of a structure like a course, a formal course, is great. But I just think this time is a precious time to invest and plant seeds, because and the things that you might unexpectedly, you know, you might say to yourself, like, oh, I write plays, or I'm not doing like the one-man show things. I've been writing ensemble pieces. But then all of a sudden, I ended up writing a little children's story. You know, one of my favorite stories is ever. And it was the cartoon version, to be honest, that I watched first. It was one with Peter O'Toole, voiceover of the Hound of the Baskervilles. And when I was listening to James O'Brien talking to Michael Pergo, when he said, he was talking about, he listened to all, he read all these classics. He didn't read them. He was reading the comic version, the graphic novel version. But I've been able to rewrite a bit of The Hound of the Baskervilles, but I've called it Hounslow and the Baskervilles. And the representation of the hound is COVID. And so I'm writing for the representation of the students and the kids that I don't see represented. And just the impact of what's happened. And with the course, the Black Curriculum, that was a document that was produced in 2020, I'm just seeing representation and the decolonialization of the curriculum and white privilege. So it's a very powerful thing to almost transmogrify and morph in these particular times.
Yeah, so the program that you're in and the reading and your reactions, your immediate gut reactions are sort of becoming, they're going to help you in the way you teach, but also it sounds like in the way you create theater. How do you think this might be in a few more months for you? How might your mind have, or how might you have created some different things for the curriculum based on what you've just said?
Well, I think that Hounslow and the Baskervilles will be there as a tool to use, and also literature. I'm going to be published in another book in December, and it will get released in January. Now, Sarah Mullin, who did What They Didn't Teach You on Your PGCE, which has now gone international, she's written, or she's gathering everyone together to do something called Chronicles from the Classroom. And I wrote an article, 500 words, which was about teaching creative writing in a multicultural, multi-faith context. Now, if I just take the title now, Narnia, Oz, Wonderland, N-O-W. As a child, that was my now, you know? But the students that I'm teaching, that's not representative of their now. So in terms of gender, in terms of class, in terms of people's humanity, what is their imaginary worlds and how the expansion and inclusion of that, how is that valid? So it looks at these ideas, and people like Mallory Blackman, people like Tanika Gumpter and Stephen Kilman, the stories that they're telling, I just think it's expansive. The way we, so it breaks my heart when a student is writing about Mary and Arthur. And I'm going, why are you writing about Mary and Arthur? You know, you can tell us about Abdul, tell us about Muhammad, tell about Mrs. Acta. They don't see that as credible. And I just think we've got to continue to advocate and champion voices, different voices. And I think that's a real, really powerful thing when we're seeing this kind of disproportionate polarity and separatism in movements that are happening.
And do you see yourself writing another one-person show out of this experience, or leading on from the last show that you were talking about?
Not a one-person show. I think my experiences that I've been having, my education has been a bit of Prime Video. I downloaded it was made in 1988. Michael Moyers with Joseph Campbell. To bring all this together, what is actually permeating through the work now of something like pay, personally, paying off that amount of debt, and on another level, breaking out of a relationship, which you realise the push and pull of being, I'm indebted to you, oh no, you owe me, oh, I paid for this, and not only financially, but emotionally as well, is very, very powerful, because then all of a sudden you're not coming from a space where you can be victimized, because you're the king of your own castle. You're the goddess of your own realm. So that's very powerful. And just what's been happening in London today with the NHS workers marching about pay, it's that ripple effect of an idea which permeates politically and socially, but it's coming from the center of a play, which is about love. and the love of yourself. And it's just thinking, well, getting out of debt financially, emotionally and spiritually. I did say emotionally as opposed to sexually, because then it alludes to like prostitution. But then I have to think, you know, in my experiences, oh, I love you. You know, I love the flat that we lived in back in the day. There's that honesty around that. And the ideas that are in Margaret Atwood's book, Payback, just the way she splits it up into ancient balances and debt and sin, debt as plot, the shadow side, and payback, they were already being woven into the fabric of the play. And what I didn't expect within the piece is that in all those things about economics, was that it was looking at the idea of what monogamy is, and regardless of sexuality, but you know, you invest in something, and then when someone doesn't want to have a monogamous relationship, it's like the shares, literally and figuratively, are being opened up for other issues. And so it was interesting seeing how those parallel ideas worked and danced with each other. And in a way, there's two quotes just to close with. There's one from Queen Victoria III, where she talks about grief is the price you pay for love. And the infamous one from Oscar Wilde, where he talks about nowadays people know the price of everything and the value of nothing. And if there's one thing that's happened over this course since we've talked 3 months ago, is holding to our hearts what we value most, what we cherish, and a space to redirect and reorientate ourselves for the greater good, and that we invest and value ourselves and our humanity.
Matthew, do you have anything else you'd like to add before we end?
See you at Christmas.
Okay. So stay safe, take care. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Awesome. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.